makes me feel so doggone blue to listen to that old smokestack. Drivers are rolling on, leaving me here behind. Give me back them good old days and let me ramble down the line. That lonesome train, I love to hear the whistle blow. She's taking the sun and leaving the rain and making me want to go. I've got the blues, longing for her company. Many miles from where I am to the only one for me. It's so lonesome here, waiting for the manifest. I hope that engineer is kind enough to let me be his guest. Pound to me, take me everywhere I want to go, get my transportation free.
This is Dave Monk, the Prairie Monk, WAFT Champaign 90.1 on your FM dial.
And Dave on the board. Today is Sunday, July the 14th, 2019, and this is WEFT's program, The Prairie Monk, our weekly look at rails, trails, green rays, conservation, and whatever Dave has been up to.
And yesterday I left early for Paxton to 9 a.m. start of an auction of the high school that was designed by Roya, and found that very interesting. I'd like to tell you a little bit about a country auction in case you haven't been to one. There are a few basic rules of the game, and quite a crowd there, some of them very professional, knowing what they wanted, and some emotional people wanting to get a keepsake, whether it be a sporting trophy or something that belonged to the era when they were at that school. The school has been a middle school and then a grade school. So this is the first time I was inside, so I was very interested, especially in the royal designed theater place or where there's basketball games. A nice floor on the basketball court, and bleachers a little lower, and back there was a balcony with seats that had backs to them, probably more high-priced seats. And then beyond that there was regular bleachers again, wooden bleachers. And built into the building. Just behind there was a little alcove where probably journalists could be, and a window that looked out over the road. Lower down in the back there was an entrance to the building, and a little alcove on one side which had a small door, the door that you could crawl under. And this was the ticket sales place, and something for probably janitors on the other side. But just the design of it is interesting. The stairwells to upstairs were wooden and nicely appointed. So I walked around and watched for a while. It was later that the gymnasium was sold, the bleachers were sold, the chairs were sold in units of four, because the fifth chair had to be destroyed in order to get out the first chairs. When you have features like that, then the there's a two-week period when you can come in and get your materials out. Most people take out what they've bought if it's the sort of thing you can manage. And the gymnasium floor was sold. The bricks have been sold. The auctioneers were moving quickly. Two auctions at the same time, which is sometimes a problem if you want to be in both places. You have to have a team, or you have to have contact with cell phone and run back and forth. The auctioneers had a team of support people. Some of them had walking sticks that pointed to the particular item, so there was no mistake about what you were bidding on. Then there was a secretary, and everyone had to have a number, a large number which sat in your pocket so that people could see it. The auctioneer would sell and refer to the number and the item, and the secretary would report that. And then there were people in behind that would label the sold item and put something like masking tape across it so it didn't get sold again, or they lost track of the information. And those people also had lavaliers so that they could add information if necessary and point out where they were going next. If the item was not selling very well, the auctioneer would put a price on the item. So if it's a chair and it wasn't selling very well, perhaps put $2 on the bid. And then if somebody bid, that would be okay. If nobody else wanted to bid on it for a higher price, then the person got that for the $2 price the auctioneer had put on that item. People who attend auctions fairly regularly know how to make themselves obvious if they're bidding, and they also know how to walk away and make it themselves not obvious if they're not going to bid on that particular item. There were people who were bidding on pots and pans, but there was also heavy-duty restaurant equipment that brought quite many much money and quite a few bidders. I think overall the auction was successful. A surprising amount of the Royer architecture inside, like recessed cabinets and things like that, also sold. So people would have to take them undone and take them out. And if you were to ever reuse the building, they would have to be replaced or simulated. I talked to the school superintendent, McClure. We had been to a school meeting, school board meeting some while ago, and some of us wanted to say that this building is a national level building. So if you have a voting behavior, and that is often touted, 3 years ago, the local voting was to take this building out. It's very common for that to happen. There are examples where high schools have been vacated and sit around for a while, and then breakdown. There's been one at Rankin just recently, and eventually it collapsed. So there's precedence for not having your buildings be like that. But this is an iconic structure designed by Royer, who's a well-known architect in this region, but also in other states, and has a respectability that is sort of on a national level. So when you vote locally, you have to know that very few people are well-read enough to know the details of the assessment of the value of the materials in the building. Sometimes the buildings are the walls are very substantial, and the roofs are substantial, even though they may leak in a place, but they're substantial. So you have to say, did the general public know, and did the local public know what it is that is the history of this building? And that's really only coming out now, with Adams and others who have reported on Royer and given people an idea of the value of this building. I am well aware of that voting procedure, and it was sort of felt that I had some intimate connection with the building, and it was almost apologetic that they recognized I had some emotional involvement. That really wasn't the case. This is one of those buildings that if you know enough and you have precedent enough, the building can be saved and it can be economically viable. So I was talking to the superintendent about the Kickapoo Trail, which has just been instituted and already is showing its economic value, but also its community value. It didn't get awfully far with that sort of situation. I did want to say that this is more than just for Paxton. We are, as a group, and wanting to inspire a trace from Chicago to Sekiro that would be a natural and cultural trace, and this building could be part of that. And I think very few people in Paxton realize that we've been working at that sort of thought for 30 years, and it's just sort of coming to head now. And could the school board either promote the sale of the building or delay the demolition of it for a while just to let people get their thoughts into action? And that's often avoided by taking out the building quickly because then there's no debate. But there are petitions in Paxton, at least 500, I think, And there are people who dearly want to preserve this building. But overall, we're looking for a visitor center, a community center, a place where you can do work, perhaps where you can recreate, perhaps where you can have a boutique bread and breakfast. and those things take a while to put together. So one way or another, we were talking back in a well-mannered fashion. But it was fairly adamant that the building was due to come down. Mm-hmm. And I find from other people that it has already been assigned to the police people who can have training by breaking doors or what have you. We're familiar with that. Often, if a building is to be burned down, The fire departments actually move in and use it as a base for experimentation with training. And so that's in the background. But with those buildings, the asbestos that's present is usually not in contact with people. And it can be painted over, it can be used as is, as long as it's not being walked on or moved in such a way that asbestos fibers will get into people's lungs. So the difference between saving the building and having to eliminate the hazardous waste, which is mainly asbestos, that move is somewhere between about a million and a half to do it. And you not only have to take out the asbestos and put it into bins and send them to places like Kansas where they're buried with a survey, so there you actually know where this stuff is stored. It's very expensive. And it's not always totally necessary, and it's not always very obvious that the funding could be so different if you retain the building. From what I can understand in the background, the voting behavior for this was about 3 years ago, and it was fairly dramatically at that point decided that the building should go. And that doesn't always mean that the public has had an opportunity to get involved. If you were game to get up and go and do things, you might have been able to do something during that period. It's quite a while. But that's not always the case. I have been involved in the loss of the Pepsin factory in Monticello, which I regarded as a historic economic development example, and that history is now gone. And it often depends on a small clique of people who are really oriented to taking materials out or buildings out. For six generations, we've been surviving and doing the best we can, and part of it is to take out. But if you go to Europe and you are going to go to interesting places, then a 2,000-year-old building is important. And we need to have some of that sort of situation where people who are five generations ahead of us can look back and say, this is the history of these people, this is what they did and how they did it. So you ask people like the superintendent to think about how this history can remain around, and also to think about how this particular piece of history relates to an overall trail. So if you start at Kankakee, you have sand dunes after glaciation, and you have a very different sort of prairie. You have Cajun French involvement. You have mafioso, the era of having liquor come up the Iroquois River. You have Gilman and Augie Keitzman, and just a welter of information that is not well known, but it's kind of fun to discover. We're getting to the era where we have the education and the time to investigate these places. So ecotourism is a big deal, and people would like to come to your territory and find out what corn and soybeans is about and what's the background behind that. And in so doing, you're asking the local people to know their history, which they don't always know. And it includes prairie plants that they're not even known by most of the public. So how can we incorporate this sort of building into a longer corridor? Brian Adams has provided us with a map of Peoria architectures that are on Route 45 all the way south to Cairo. You have to realize that 45 is an older road. It's been replaced by 57. So most of the heavy traffic is on 57. So then you can do things. There have been attempts at the south end of this corridor at Rantoul. You have an Air Force base which went through the problems of being closed, but there's history there. And there was a Air Force museum, and it was probably a little premature, but you can, and it has closed, but it could be a part of the future. You might want to modify it, and but there's the opportunity to try and fail, but try again and make this a possibility. We've bought 9 acres near to our cemetery, and that then extends to 10 miles of wide railroad right-of-way prairie that transects two moraines and has that sort of character. So I left the auction and went looking for other places that I'm very aware of. About 30 years ago, we were approached to if we could put in a prairie that a nursing home could enjoy. And we said yes. And we had Schramm, who was at the time head of the biology department at Knox College, to come and plant a prairie, and he planted some of the interesting plants in the front and the taller plants at the back, so there was they weren't going to shade each other out, or the visual corridor was not going to be possible. And so I went up. The nursing homes are always about a mile out of town, and they often have a little farm with them. And I went up, and sure enough, we've been watching it and worrying about it because the nursing home is closed. The theory is that if the nursing home is closed for a year, it can then become an assisted living, which is a much more lucrative form of insurance these days. Many people are staying at home and not going to a nursing home, but they do often need assisted living. So it's assumed that this nursing home will come back as an assisted living place. Well, I was taking photographs. I was walking the yards of this, probably about 2 acres, and taking photographs of it. And then the next door neighbor arrived, and I got talking to him. And the friendly thing of this is that he enjoys prairie. He's been there for about 5 years. He's bought the prairie, and that saves it. And he enjoys it. He's taken out the trees that were invading it, and he's burned it with a controlled burn. And it is saying thank you, and it's looking about 3 feet high at the moment and doing very well. So there's also, this is on a road which is on the west side of the railroad, but there's crossovers to the north and to the south. So you could take someone off of 45 and look at this reconstruction prairie. A little bit the same way as we could do the same with a load of prairie a little further up the road, where there's an original prairie and a buffer zone prairie. And some history. So I was very pleased with that conversation, and I think I also was pleased to find that somebody else was interested in the preservation of the high school. I went down the road a bit, and there's a, where there was an east-west railroad that crossed the Illinois Central at Paxton, and the nickel plate was taken out, but there was a museum there, and it's had its moments too. So you have to wonder, do you have the energy or the personalities to keep this sort of thing afloat? There are costs. You have to pay for the heating and the water and all the utilities, and that cost is not always there. I visited a little pocket prairie up the road, and it is on a site that was the Majestic Theater. It unfortunately burned down, but Bob Reber and his wife have been putting in a pocket prairie, which you have spoken about before, but it's very nice. The county building is a royal building, and it's older than the high school and still being used. The there's a Carnegie Library. I walked into the Carnegie Library, and I was rather impressed, and it's being used as a functional library. Sometimes the Carnegie Library has been vacated because it's felt that it's not big enough to handle more modern equipment. I went to the... I went looking for a West Lawn School, retired some time ago. It's not the East Lawn School that was a Royal School that was being auctioned yesterday. It was the an older school, a tall brick school, three stories high, and we're still looking for a possible visitor center. This is not as suitable, especially if you wanted to do big exhibit work, and the more extended floors and the gymnasiums and the like that are in the Royer School are much better, and it's also much closer to 45. I needed to look at that to see what was there. I didn't get to go west to see some of the history that's well documented on Route 9 that includes little churches and old schools and cemeteries that make history feasible. If you're a bicyclist these days, you can take 45 days to ride across the country. If you are interested in poking around, you can take 2 years to bicycle across the country. But the thing is that you communicate with the local people, and in so doing, they enjoy and you enjoy, and they learn about themselves in order to interpret to other people. And this is a very friendly thing, so you don't necessarily have to have a car, but you can also have a car with bicycles on it and stop off and enjoy. And so I'm still looking. Unfortunately, as I poked around, I'm in a little CRX, and it tends to boil if you do that sort of thing, and it boiled. And so the water hoses burst, and I had to leave my car outside the West Lawn School. I walked around. I hoped I might be able to rent a car to come back, but that didn't eventuate. A Napper, which has parts that I might have been able to repair my car, was closed. Mm. So I went back to the auction, and I thought, well, okay, there's Alan Strong and others that I knew from Champaign that were there. Maybe someone from Champaign I could get a ride back home. And that wasn't exactly the case. Alan was moving stuff to Indiana, and so wasn't the right direction. But somebody heard this discussion and said she could help And she's from the local community. She was there, I think, probably because they're interested in a food distribution unit in Paxton. She was probably buying equipment that would help that. And she was at the auction, and she was leaving, and she thought she could take me home. So I was very pleased about that and made a new friend. I wanted to warn her that I was a renegade bum in this situation because I didn't really belong. I was trying to preserve the building. And immediately she gave me a handshake because she was in the same boat. She would like to see this building preserved. We went back to my car, picked up the equipment that I needed to take out, including the camera we're using today. And then she decided she probably didn't have time to do this, but her mother would be able to take me back to Champaign. So also, mother has a huge lawn, which she has to mow, and she would rather to do some pollinating things or prairie. The problem is that she lives near to a previous mayor who is into mowing. And so prairie is 8 foot tall when it's up. So we had this discussion, and mother took me back to Rantoul, where we looked at the prairie, the Pope Prairie, and so she could get an idea of what a prairie looks like. She has probably an acre and a half behind the house that could be something different. And how would you do that? Would you put it into the lawn in patches, or would you take out the whole lawn and do a complete thing? We don't know, but that is interesting. She would also, she's a nurse, so retired, and has to realize that grasses aren't the only part of a prairie. There's 100 broadleaves. So we walked around the Pope Prairie a little while and came back to Champaign, and I very much appreciated that help. My little CRX, red CRX that you recognize outside, is still sitting up at Paxton waiting for repair. And so I'm hoping that we can put together some sort of prospectus that will let people know the place of these various buildings and how might they be used, and could they be a visitor center? Is Paxton a local place for a visitor center? It would seem so. It's mid-state, more or less, and that has a national-level architectural building, and it's interesting. So we've sung this song and dance, but somehow we have to get people together to think about it being a reality. We have not given up on the demolition of this building. So what is the next procedure? We're not quite sure. Some of us have not done this a lot of times before, so it's experimental. See how you can take the concept into action at the local level, how you can work with the state. Often when there's a historic building involved or a historic natural area or a natural area that's endangered, there are agencies, like historic preservation agencies, natural history preservation agencies, the Nature Conservancy and others. And there's an opportunity to get these organizations together. And it takes quite a bit of talent to do this. This is not where you can provide 20 people with opportunity to give you an hour or two of help. This is where you need lawyers and accountants and people who write proposals, and it's not an easy task. But there are some people who do it very well, if you can corral them. And they're often very much in demand because there are a few of them. And then you have to have some of the fathers of the institution to be involved, often referred to as an academic humanist. And an academic humanist is someone who balances the engineering and the architecture and the more formal items with some humanistic history or psychology or philosophy.
We're going to take a really quick moment here, as I have the same problems Dave has, to mention that you're listening to the Prairie Monk program here on WEFT Champaign.
Leaving that a while, I had someone who came, I called up and asked, military people from Japan, they're U.S. people but in the military in Champaign, and the son needs to get some hours of time, and could we help? And I said, yes. So we went up to the Pope Prairie, and I'm not sure whether they were there on Saturday because I was otherwise involved, but they were able to take out conifer trees like cedars that are very much invasive in prairie. And so just that help is tremendous. And that happens often, and we enjoy that sort of help. The prairie at the moment is in fine fettle. It's liatris is just coming up to be fruiting body high. It's at Paxton, in downtown Paxton, the temperature is probably a little higher. So there the blazing star or liatris is tall, about 4 or 5 feet tall, and in flower at the moment. Once you get outside of the all the air conditions that are producing a perhaps 3 degree rise in temperature, then it's back to a regular temperature, and on the Pope Prairie the liatris is still in the boot and not quite ready to flower. No, there's not even one or two early birds that are likely to be obvious if you're working at this sort of thing. The coneflowers, purple coneflowers, are interesting. At one time in many years, the area has been wall-to-wall purple coneflowers. And this year, there's almost none. And that makes you wonder, what are the limits? Is this climate change? Is this excess water? Is it when the organism has displayed itself very well, does it need time to recoup and generate for next year? We don't know. So at the moment, the purple coneflower is a little on the wimpy side, and not very many of them. And this is not unusual in biological circumstances. Even the monarch butterfly has had problems, and it might be thought that they had a cold spell when not expected, and the population goes down. And then it rebounds, you hope. A lot of our population is not rebounding because we don't have the habitat left to support the but I've been there in the last few days. Ron Slater was here on Thursday, I think, and or Wednesday. And we spot herbicided some of the remaining teasel. We're very pleased with 7 years of working with the Pope Prairie. It doesn't have a lot of teasel, but it can always invade, and it always has primary leaves and shoots where you get a rosette. It takes 2 years before it's a fruiting body, but that rosette takes out, it shades out the prairie that's nearby. I was taking down autumn olive trees, and they're in the same boat. They don't belong. They take advantage of the fact that the railroads and roads drain their roads so the trees can come in. Trees like moisture, but they don't like to be flooded. So once you get rid of the moisture, the crud trees come in. So I have very strong clippers. I'll take an inch branch, and I just leave it drop, and it will rot. And I'm amazed that underneath these plants, there are prairie plants just waiting for the light to get there, and they almost immediately say thank you. We feel a little embarrassed because as I was taking out the trees, the birds were scolding me, and so I know that there's bird nests in there, but I want those trees out because we have a wonderful little piece of interurban line, and it is well drained on either side, but over probably 70 years, it has developed a very nice ecosystem, and we use that seed to augment the Pope Prairie, which is basically a gravel pit where 8 feet of glacial till was taken away for road pack. And so we're there looking at plants that are coming in almost the same as if you glacier left 10,000 years ago. We're just speeding up the process by seeding it occasionally, but being fairly careful to try and simulate what was. And that makes the corridor itself, where the soils have not been disturbed or the vegetation has survived. We like to see that to get an idea of what a prairie was like, and then we try to simulate that. We hope we get the bacteria and the fungi and the creatures that are in the soil too, and that is raw on the burrow pit, the name that is given to the gravel pit. It's assumed that in the day when you put in a side road to put in a bridge, that you would return the gravel, and that's why it's called a burrow pit. But very seldom these days does the gravel come back to the burrow pit. But there it is, a raw glacial till, gradually accumulating organic matter and filling in. Give it 200 years and you'll have a very decent little prairie, 9 acres. But you have to have that sort of patience. The moment all the plants that are on the gravel pit are smaller and they're putting down roots, and it will take them some time to fill in. We sometimes have people who think that this is an unused area and deserves to be used as a place us to run four-wheel vehicles and motorcycles into the mud. We don't have very good fences, but that sort of activity can cost us a lot of damage for many, many years. So in 5 minutes, you can ruin an area for 70 years. Signage is fairly important, and it's with a big thank you to the Department of Transportation, which put a gate up on that allows us to take our vehicles into the old Route 45 corridor and not have tandem trucks and others drop garbage in that corridor. So we were very pleased with that. Even so, people do try to move in by other methods, and we just need some funding to put fencing up that is substantial enough to remind people that this is a preservation site. The plants that are obvious at the moment are monarda or bee balm, and they're amongst the blackberries. There's a monarda flowering with its blue flower, and I'm taking out the trees, and the plant is saying thank you for this liberation. But the blackberries were loaded, and I felt sad to take them out, but I don't want to encourage a blackberry jungle. And so the seeds are also something that the birds can, wildlife can use, but we're aware of that. So sometimes our natural areas have been somewhat destroyed by plants like Russian olives or autumn olives that have they're thought to be a food source for birds, but then the birds fly around, and so that has become a regional weed tree. And so when you feed animals with something like blackberries, you have to know that very shortly you're going to have blackberries in other places. The other plants that are out at the moment, the big blue stem on that little interurban prairie, about a foot high. Some of them, the big blue stem is more than that. But that too was a ballast. And so it's not necessarily the most pristine original prairie. It's what has grown there from surrounding natural areas. And we're just very, very proud of it because it has this biodiversity. There's dock and there's Totoscanthia and just a welter of plants that start off with starry-eyed grass in the spring. And there's also just a very small group of hoary puccoon, which is an indication that there's this is a wildlife site. There's not a lot of litter accumulated, so we don't burn it yet, but it's getting to the point where it could be burned, and that will stimulate growth and burst seeds that don't get burst anymore. I have a pictorial record of this. Part of doing this is to create images that will give you an idea of what the potential of this corridor is and what the potential of prairie plants is and how you balance that with trees. So we thank people like Ron who come fairly regularly from Decatur and work on this prairie. At this time, it's growing tall enough that if we have teasel left over, we have to wire whip them because you just don't want their seed heads with 1,000 seeds to create a mess of seed bank in soil that will grow for the next 400 years. So we're careful to try and stop them from growing in the first place, but then trying to eliminate them if they manage to escape us in the first place. I've been walking around the Big Dig in Champaign, and it's doing well at the moment. It has some brown seeding bodies at the moment, and that happens to be an English dock that doesn't survive. But this is an area where there's water. And the seed of the English dock has a little bladders that allow it to float. So if you have English dock and there's going to be water around, then you should be careful to get rid of it, because it will spread. It's not the most invasive plant. It has a deep root, so you can get a narrow shovel and one on one side and one on the other, and pop that root out, and you're done with it. But it's one that needs to be watched. Hemlock is around. Mm. Hemlock is looks like a carrot going to seed, and it's poisonous. And if you take it out with a sickle and you get the juice on your arms, you can get dermatitis. Mm. If you concentrate the elements of hemlock, you can be like Socrates and drink a deadly drink. Something the same with parsnip. Wild parsnip sometimes can take over. Wild parsnip is in the carrot family, and we tend to not bother too much about it, but it can take over. Otherwise, the prairie is relatively free of weed species. And the clover is up at the moment, and these little lumps of purple, and the overall accumulation of organic matter around a few plants. Rosin weed is there. It's just coming into bloom, and yellow flowers are characteristic. There's some cordgrass here and there to remind you that that's there. We don't have a lot of cup plant, because cup plant is kind of on the weedy side. But the area is gradually filling in, and we're rather pleased, and we would like to buy the next door piece of farmland, which is very weedy, not being used as farmland, but to extend the prairie, to have a place where people can actually view and even not be too disturbed about destroying a little piece of prairie in order to find out about it. And that would relieve the Pope Prairie, which is next door and is much more original. And we care about that. The road that was going to be a dual highway has succumbed to, it was bought and 57 went into the west, so it's no longer needed. But the Department of Transportation owns it, and they planted one species, which is an ash tree, and the emerald ash borer has taken to that. So if you go to that little prairie at the moment, you'll see the dead ash trees, but underneath it you will see autumn olives and wild cherries and the like taking over, and get the impression that the Department of Transportation will probably tidy up that site. We would like to see the Department of Transportation give us a more formal recognition that corridor could be a historic site in an overall trace. So we've been talking to the Department of Transportation, especially the roadside people, and they've put up signs that indicate prairie, and they also have signs that keep the mowers just to the downslope to the ditch on the side of the road, and not further than that. There's not a lot of what we regard sometimes as overzealous mowing. Sometimes it's almost recreational mowing, We would like to continue that, but have some sort of permission to be in there and doing things, and some recognition at the public level, so we could put up some signs and say what we're doing there. That would help the Paxton situation if we want to use a vacant building for a visitor center as well as other things. Okay, let me say something about the activity in the streets. It's been pretty huge. And last night on the over by Taylor Street, there was an event with hundreds of people there. And it was a food event, and I don't have the details, but we're being inundated with these sorts of activities, which are very friendly, and it's changing the style of Market Street and other streets that are nearby. It's a part of gentrification, and you get to know the people who are coming here, and we have next door to us a new outfit, and shortly I hope to have them on as guests. They're selling gaming activities. Mm-hmm. And so we have to time it so that both of the people involved can come and share. But I talked to Jason, who is the manager of the Poor Company, and I think they're doing very well, and especially they're using the area which used to be the Pocket Prairie. Mm-hmm. And there's a bandstand at the end of it, and so when the Friday night band has retreated at about 8:30, then a different band will start up at the other end. And this has been more exciting than we anticipated. I've been putting out pictures of prairie plants, big pictures that are expensive, and trying to assess whether the drinking population is interested in the natural history. I haven't seen it working yet, but I'm watching and caring, and perhaps if we open up our building a little more, we might be able to encourage that sort of interaction. I had a young person from China who was being chaperoned around town to see what was going on. He looked in our window, which is kind of different from most other buildings on Market Street. And he wanted to know how we got into this and what we're doing. And so, yes, there are people who are interested and excited by this sort of thing. So walking over to the pocket, the big dig at the moment, the plants that we took there are doing very well, except where they're in a low spot, and they haven't done so well. And but walking around at night, there's just enough light to see the plants. And you can start at University Avenue, where there's a prairie on top of the boneyard. The boneyard goes under University Avenue with 8-foot pipes, and then it comes out, and you can see it roam through the big dig. It's somewhat lower than it used to be, the whole point being to catch water and allow it to accumulate, so it doesn't cause a